Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Oh, yeah.
It's that time of night, you can't stay uptight. So come and join the people and I'm feeling all right here on Overnight America. Overnight America.
I love it when we get to play that opening. Oh, it's so good. Doug and Donna were fantastic putting that together. Welcome to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, on Twitter, at Ryan Recker. And if you miss any part of the show, the podcast is at KMOX.com/ONA. And for the next half hour, I want to thank our guest, who are going to join us in just a moment, Harvard Law professor and former senior U.S. Department of Justice official. He's got a new book out called In Hoffa's Shadow. Jack Goldsmith, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thank you for having me.
All right, thank you. Did you grow up in Detroit, or you grew up somewhere outside of Detroit?
I grew up in Memphis, down the river from you.
Oh, not too far at all. You know, you have your ties to Detroit, so the book is In Hoffa's Shadow, A Stepfather, A Disappearance in Detroit, In My Search for the Truth. People have been searching this forever. See, I grew up in Detroit, so everyone talked about the mystery of Jimmy Hoffa and what happened with him. And what's interesting is you have a family tie to this. Maybe you can explain who Charles O'Brien is.
Sure. Charles Chucky O'Brien was Hoffa's, met Hoffa when he was 9 years old. Hoffa practically raised him. And at age 19 in 1952, until Hoffa disappeared, or until a few months before Hoffa disappeared, in 75, Chucky was Hoffa's right-hand man, his closest aide. So that was his connection to Hoffa. And his connection to me was that my mother married him, and he became my stepfather about 6 weeks before the disappearance. So
wow.
I kind of grew up in the whole disappearance maelstrom as a young boy.
That must have been difficult.
It was more difficult for him and my mother. I didn't fully understand what was going on, but it was very, very difficult for the family, yes.
Yeah, and what a time. When you grow up in this, you start to learn the history of the family, and once you start to get a little bit older and you realize just how serious some of these allegations are, and when the U.S. government comes down on you, man, they come down on you. They'll overstep their bounds if they feel like they got the right person, and it sounds like they really came after Charles O'Brien.
They went after him very, very hard. They had some reasons to believe he was involved, and but they really, many elements of the government were excessive and abusive in many respects, putting out false claims about what he said or what he was guilty of. And it was tough. They can really go after you. I had different views about this over the course of my life. When I was a teenager growing up in all this, I was kind of on Chucky's side. I was experiencing it as he did, and I thought they were exaggerating the influence of the mob, and he was completely innocent. At a different stage, when I was in college and law school and thinking about my career, I basically worried about the mob associations that Chucky had, and that these were friends of mine, people I grew up with, and his criminal past. So I kind of separated from him. But then after my own service in the Justice Department, I kind of looked at it again differently. And he was treated very badly over the course of his life, primarily because they accused him of this crime 44 years ago. They figured out about 25 years ago that he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still stuck with it publicly, even though they haven't told the world that.
Oh, boy. What about your own walk with the U.S. government? When you start to work with the U.S. Department of Justice, how quick did they bring this up, your ties to it all?
So every step, I had to get three government clearances over the course of my professional career, one in a clerkship, one when I worked in the Defense Department, and one when I worked in the Justice Department. And at every step, especially the last one, because it was a high-level position, very high security clearances, Senate confirmation, it became an issue. You know, I had basically my stepfather was the leading suspect in the Hoffa disappearance. I grew up with these mob figures. And it was an issue, but I got through it primarily because I was basically blew Chucky off when I was in my 20s and had separated myself so clearly from him that the government didn't think I was a subject for blackmail and didn't think I would be influenced by those forces.
Wow.
But it was a very big issue when I was getting these government jobs.
In Hoffa Shadow is the name of the book that just came out, A Stepfather, A Disappearance in Detroit, In My Search for the Truth. And author Jack Goldsmith joining us here on KMOX. You had a lot of conversations with Charles O'Brien. Did he talk to anyone else with his stories, or were you primarily the person he opened up to?
He was the only lead suspect that always proclaimed his innocence. He was the only lead suspect that talked to the FBI and insisted he was innocent. And a couple of times over the years, he tried to go on television and proclaim his innocence. He was on 60 Minutes. He was on the Charlie Rose Show. But he wasn't very successful. He had a lot of pressures on him from various places. He's not very articulate, at least on television he wasn't. He didn't do a good job trying to clear himself, and he never talked to anyone really about it. But he talked to me for 7 years, for well over 1,000 hours, probably closer to 2,000 hours of conversation. And he told me a lot of stuff about Hoffa, about the disappearance, about his experience with the Justice Department over 40 years. And we grew very close. It was a wonderful experience because, as I said, we were estranged for 20 years. He was a great father when I was a teenager, despite all the context.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew very close in talking about the book for 7 or 8 years.
Wow. What about your mother? Did you have conversations with her about her side of this?
Of course. Yeah. They're both still alive. They both live in Boca Raton. And she was often present for our conversations. She would chime in. I interviewed her separately for her remembrance of the various events. So I talked to them both, but mostly to my stepfather.
Was it hard for you to be so personally involved with this, knowing the connection with the family when you're doing research, you're finding out things in the background? I don't even know if your name would come up if you look at some documents, if you were even mentioned in some of those. But when you have this own personal connection to it, sometimes it makes things a little bit more complicated, more difficult.
You're absolutely right. And this would happen at odd moments. I looked at many hundreds of thousands of pages of government documents and other documents, and it would happen at odd moments. One time I was looking in the old 1970s FBI files, and they would be interviewing someone about Chucky, and he would be talking about his new family, and he pulled out a picture of his new sons out of his billfold. He was my stepfather for 6 months. He was a great man, great stepfather,
mm-hmm.
but he really loved us, and he was kind of bragging on his new family. That was a poignant moment. There were times when I came up in the FBI files when they were worried that I might have some association to all this stuff for my first security clearance. They were very worried about that. And, you know, my family would come up now and again, but the whole experience was kind of, it was difficult to relive this history, relive the painful history of me and Chucky, because I didn't treat him very well in the middle part of my life, the early middle part of my life.
And
so
he,
it was actually the most, I've written a lot of books, but this was the most painful and difficult by far.
Yeah, and being that he was the leading suspect for all those years and the government, you know, they can never give a straight answer. You know, they don't like to admit when they're wrong. They just kind of let it be or whatever. And, you know, hopefully they feel there's so many hundreds of millions worth of paperwork and documents out there that, there's a chance that it'll never be undocumented or it'll never come up in the future. So we'll just let it be. And, you know, the government's like that in a way. There's so many, I don't know how many boxes of documents that haven't been looked at in, you know, 80 years, 70, 60 years or whatever, and very important documents that are just waiting to be rediscovered. It just takes the right person to do that. You know, Jimmy Hoffa, it's such a tale that people still pay very close attention today. They still speculate what they believe would have happened. They're still making movies about it. Isn't that what the Netflix movie's all about?
Yeah, the Netflix movie, The Irishman, is about the disappearance, sure.
Was he depicted, your stepfather, in that?
He was. He was played by Jesse Plemons. The movie repeated the same story that's been repeated for 44 years. And he, just like all the other stories, based on what the FBI said in 1975, the movie portrays Chucky driving Hoffa to his killers.
Yeah. Well, Jack Goldsmith joins us on KMOX here tonight. Do you mind holding on after the break? I want to talk to you more about your book, In Hoffa's Shadow.
That would be great. Thank you.
Perfect. So Jack Goldsmith joining us here, and he's a Harvard Law professor, former senior U.S. Department of Justice official. And the book is called In Hoffa's Shadow, A Stepfather, A Disappearance in Detroit, In My Search for the Truth. We'll continue with him next on KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. michaelsflooringoutlet.com on KMOX.
Welcome back. In Hoffa's Shadow is the name of the book, A Stepfather, A Disappearance in Detroit. In My Search for the Truth, and author Jack Goldsmith joins us again on Overnight America. I just hopped on Amazon, your number one bestseller in Irish biographies. So that's pretty neat. You pay attention to those things? You hop on Amazon and see how it's trending?
Not very often, no. Sometimes.
You know, there's a lot of people talk about the way the government operates today. Surveillance is a big deal. And that was a big part of your book when you start to uncover some of these secret government surveillance abuses. It's not something that's a recent thing. It's not something that just happened after September 11th. I mean, it's something the government's been doing for years. What did you uncover when you were doing research for In Hoffa's Shadow?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. There's a long prehistory to our current surveillance controversies. It goes back to the 1930s and 40s. I actually started working on this first when I was in the government, working on surveillance matters in the George W. Bush administration in the early 2000s. And I was working on some difficult stuff then, and a lot of the issues I dealt with had a prehistory, as you said, many of the same type of issues. In the 50s and 60s, the main thing I focused on was how there was a pattern back then of the FBI getting cover from the Justice Department through some not very convincing legal opinions to engage in some very, very aggressive electronic surveillance. They were against bad guys, against mob figures and their families. But it was clearly illegal. It was massive. I have thousands and thousands of pages of transcripts that I read. And it was really intrusive into their lives. And but they were very aggressive in going after the mob back then.
Wow. Is there anything today that's still classified? Any documents you couldn't get your hands on?
There was, well, it's not classified. There was a document, an FBI agent told me that one of the many reasons that they came to believe that Chucky was innocent was because of a surveillance they did on him in a car in a conversation with another mobster. And they said this was one of about 10 pieces of evidence that led them to conclude that Chucky wasn't involved. And it was a conversation between Chucky and a mobster, and the context made very clear that Chucky knew zero, nothing about the disappearance, and it definitely wasn't there that day. I tried to get that document. The FBI wouldn't give it to me. It's not classified, but they said they wouldn't even acknowledge that it existed.
Wait, in a car? So you could have been sitting in a car, and they were able to tell the conversation in that private atmosphere.
They just put a microphone bug in the car. They've been doing that for many decades.
Oh, man. Well, you look at today even. The practices are probably even worse. It probably concerns you. You go back and look at the previous practices. They may have a little bit more liberty today. And the way that we look at the way surveillance is, now every country probably has close to the same technology when it comes to surveillance. It probably concerns you greatly for our own futures.
I'm of two minds about it. It's definitely true that there's a lot more regulation, law, lawyers constrain the government in the use of surveillance technologies than there was in the 50s and 60s when there were practically no rules. On the other hand, the technology has changed so much and the surveillance capabilities are so massive and cameras and sensors are omnipresent both in the public and private sector.
Yeah.
That we're just growing increasingly naked to the government and to the private sector, and the government's tools of surveillance are huge. They're enormous.
Yeah, they probably couldn't envision people would voluntarily give up their liberties when it comes to surveillance as well. People do that quite frequently, the permissions they give to these other companies when it comes to their GPS, when it comes to their messages and things like that. You know, one of the things in your book, In Hoffa's Shadow, you uncover something about Richard Nixon that wasn't previously, well, as far as I know, has never been told before. How did Nixon play into this?
So I spent a lot of time digging up my chapter and figuring out my chapter on Nixon. Nixon played into this because he was the person who released Hoffa from jail. And I tell the tale in the chapter on Nixon about all of the corrupt machinations. He got political favors. He was given $1 million. Chucky delivered the money and a whole bunch of other political favors to release Hoffa. And Watergate was just the tip of the iceberg with Nixon. There were all sorts of other corrupt deals, and this was one of them, letting Hoffa out of jail early. But he did so on the condition that Hoffa couldn't go back into labor. And that was actually the condition that led Hoffa to go crazy and start threatening to expose the mob ties to the Teamsters Union. But the answer to your question is that Nixon basically was, for a whole bunch of political favors and money, let Hoffa out of jail.
You know, in your book, In Hoffa's Shadow, people can go to Amazon. You know, is there a website or some other place they can check it out?
I've got, it's on Amazon and all bookstores. I've got a website called inhoffashadow.com that collects all the reviews and articles and stuff written about it. It's got a few other things on there.
Yeah. You know, when you go through all these documents, this is probably one of those labors where you have to put a cutoff point. I mean, there's so much you can look at, but then there's still probably 10 times more things you haven't looked at. It's probably hard for you to find that moment where you're like, okay, I got enough for the book, but you want to keep digging because you have that personal connection to it. That must have been hard for you in general to put a book like this together and find the right things.
Well, it happened in two ways. Exactly what you said happened in two ways. One wave was, I looked at so much stuff, and I've got so much stuff in my computer and in my files. But at some point, you just can't read everything. There were millions of documents. And so you're right. I had to cut off. I had all of what I thought was the material information. But then even the stuff I couldn't have explored more, even after that, I had to leave 99% of the stuff on the cutting room floor to make the book manageable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have hundreds of hours of conversations with Chucky and FBI agents and the like, and many, many thousands of documents, and it just couldn't work it all into the book. So there's a lot of interesting stuff that never made it into the book.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be a weird question, but with your work with the U.S. Department of Justice, did you ever do any training to tell if someone's not giving you the full story or not telling you the truth?
No, I didn't. That was not part of my training in the Justice Department, but it was something that I became adept at over 7 years of interviewing.
Yeah.
And I actually studied some techniques to figure out whether someone's telling the truth or not. I'll tell you one story. I was involved. I was called before a grand jury for something related to my service in the government, nothing that I'd done wrong. And I had to have a lawyer, and the lawyer taught me the techniques he learned as a U.S. attorney for figuring out whether someone's telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So I did learn a few techniques, but no, not from the government.
I see. So I didn't know if that would have helped you. Because, you know, I'm sure the way that is being portrayed, and there's movies that come up, and, for, you know, certainly the 90s were a big period for Jimmy Hoffa when it comes to TV movies and movie or whatever in general, and even now with The Irishman on Netflix. You know, people always wonder. There's always that little bit of shadow of doubt. Could it be? Is it possible? You know, they always have these little moments in the back of their head. Could this have happened? You know, but then you kind of get to look at the documents. You've probably dug into this deeper than anyone ever has, and you get to see the firsthand accounts. You can kind of put a pretty big, you know, clearance check on a lot of these things, and I think that's sometimes not represented. Like, people will know that some of these things have been debunked or some of these different things could be debated, but they don't like to do that for the sake of the movies, or they don't like to do it for the sake of TVs or whatever it is. So that's got to be frustrating for you too, when you know the key to all this because you read the documents, but they still continue to portray things in a different way for the sake of entertainment.
So you have no idea. You have no idea how true what you just said is. And it's not just, you know, it's the movies. There's everything about this case has been based on rumors, innuendo, misinformation. It wasn't just the documents that made things clear. One of the many things, and I have, you know, 150 pages of footnotes. I footnoted everything in the book. One of the many things that distinguishes my book from others is I actually talked to the FBI agents who worked on the case, and they actually told me about the case on the record. Mm-hmm. And what really went on during the investigation, the various stages over the years. One of the things I set out to do was to be the first person to tell a true, honest, fact-based account about what we know about the Hoffa disappearance. But you're absolutely right. There's so much information out there taken as truth that's just baloney. Yep. It was very frustrating and difficult to navigate.
So the book gets out now called In Hoffa's Shadow, A Stepfather, A Disappearance in Detroit, In My Search for the Truth, Jack Goldsmith. Again, if people wanted to look you up, look up the book, where can they find it?
They can find it on Amazon.com, and they can find it with a lot of reviews and discussion and interviews on inhoffashadow.com.
Inhoffashadow.com. Number one bestseller in Irish biographies right now. And you got a lot of great positive reviews on this, too, when you go to Amazon.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, we have so many great local bookstores here in St. Louis. I'm sure they can look it up when they get there, too. And thank you so much for spending time with us, Jack Goldsmith.
Thank you very much.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. Check out In Hoffa's Shadow. Very cool conversation. Again, we'll post this online at KMOX.com/ONA. About an hour and a half ago or so, they voted on the articles of impeachment. We're going to talk about that. We'll take some of your calls, too, on Overnight America KMOX.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Da, 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 da. Welcome Welcome back to Overnight America. At Ryan Recker on Twitter, you can join me. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. We're live up until midnight, and then we do the replay hour. So you may be listening to this on replay. So we're going to be talking about impeachment. We're going to be playing some clips about impeachment. I mean, they're doing some jigs right now. They're doing these little dances on the network television stations, the CNNs, the MSNBCs. And even the Democrats that came out after the vote had a press conference, and they make it sound like, we don't want to do this, but we have to. It's our duty. And they also make it sound like they are the heroes here. Like, hey, it is our absolute honor and integrity that is at stake here. We don't find any joy in this. In fact, we are so brave for doing this. We are so brave, so brave. And courage. And they keep saying that word courage as, you know, they're pretty good at trying to control a message propaganda-wise. So I wanted to play a couple of clips. You know, real quick, this is so stupid, but I feel like I share a lot of stupid things on this program because why not? You know those commercials, we've been running them like every hour. It's those nudie pajama commercials. Because every year, right around this time, there's the, you know, Pajamagrams are a big radio advertiser. They spend tons of money on radio because it works for them. You know, they get on the station, people hear the commercials. I don't have any invested in here. They're not paying me or anything like that. They're not a sponsor for the show. But I just hear these commercials, and their big push this year is not pajamas, but it's nudie pajamas. They keep going out there saying, it feels like you're wearing nothing at all. Well, I found out, and this was a big shock to me, that producer Mike got these nudie pajamas for a gift for his father. Gift for his father, nudie pajamas. Now, that is a gift and a half. Normally, you get it for your wife, your girlfriend, you know, something like that. Because the whole idea is they make it sound like it's really intimate. And you thought, oh, my dad would like that. I'm going to make sure to order those and get it for him. I love it. Wonder if my wife is listening right now. I know where this is going.
You are fake news.
What? Okay, don't worry. When your dad opens up the gift, he's going to love it. Don't worry. He's going to open it up. He's going to say, this is the most thoughtful gift, honey. He's going to think it came from your mom. Really, you're going to have to break it to him. No, Dad, it came from me. And it's going to be a really awkward conversation.
You are fake news.
All right. So impeachment. It's here. It was a long train coming. I mean, you saw this thing going down the tracks, and we knew exactly that it was going to happen at some point. Then by the weekend, we thought, okay, Wednesday's going to be the day. A lot of people on the House floor today were pleading their case, why they should, why they shouldn't go and vote for impeachment. And it ended up exactly as we thought it would. You didn't need to have a crystal ball to figure out what was going to happen at some point. When they opened up these hearings, it was a foregone conclusion. It was predetermined. Maybe that's the better way to put it. It was predetermined. They knew exactly what they were doing. They knew that they weren't going to be guided by anything that was brought up in these hearings, and they knew they weren't going to be guided by any sort of evidence that would be presented that would be the smoking gun. They knew that wasn't going to be in the cards for this. They just knew they wanted to get this job done, and they wanted to impeach President Trump. They wanted to add him to the list of the former presidents who have been impeached, Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. President Trump now the third to be impeached. And I got to mention this to you, too, and we got to bring this up. And I was talking to some people, and I was asking the question, how in the world is this going to be a topic tonight? Because we've talked about it yesterday and the day before, and we talked about it last week and the week before, and we talked about it last month and the month before. We've been talking about this forever. There hasn't been any changes. Everything's been exactly the same. But the way we look at it now that it's official, on a night like this, you can look at it a couple of different ways. You can look at it and say, all right, here we go again. This is just the new normal. This is what's going to be the standard in American politics from now on. If you do something even with the slightest of ill intent, and that's relative to how the person likes you. So, for example, if the person doesn't like you, it is the illest of intent. If the person likes you, there is no intent. It's all relative to the person in the letter next to their name, either a D or an R. That's the new normal. Or you can look at it and say, well, maybe it's just a sad day in American history, and maybe we'll learn from this that this whole impeachment and the abuses that go on using articles of impeachment and the route that they decided to take for this, as opposed to go through other methods, they're using the United States government, they're using the taxpayer dollars, and they're using your time and effort in order to do something that they feel is going to help their chances at re-election in 2020, or in this case, try to get Donald Trump out of office. And it's sad. It's sad that it's come to this point. But some people aren't looking at as a sad thing. Some people are looking at this as a joyful, momentous moment, as finally we hate the bad man orange guy that's in office. You know, they're just ready to get him out of there, and it doesn't matter. The ends justify the means. If they have to falsify FBI documents, if they have to abuse the FISA court, if they have to go through the motions, if they have to bring on experts to talk about intentions that they don't know about, people that weren't on phone calls, people that were reading scripts but for some reason know the full truth of this but can't present any evidence that would support their feelings, but we're going to bring on law professors and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. This is probably the weakest case you can bring up against any individual person. In fact, if this were an actual trial, and that's what's going to happen next in the Senate, if this were an actual trial, I have a feeling this would have been thrown out a long time ago. I feel like the lawyers defending whoever the person would be, in this case Donald Trump, would have been able to make a motion and say, how in the world can you make a case out of this? The judge would have tossed this. And that's what we're going to see in the Senate. Unless there's some sort of bombshell, something that they've been holding on to, something that's some giant revelation, what's going to happen? Nothing. And you know what? I wouldn't put it past the Democrats right now to make up some crazy thing like they did during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings and just try to slander as much as they possibly can if they haven't done enough already in the last 3 years and just go after them and anonymously and then bring up something that can't be proven or disproven. But you know what? There's a lot of emotion around it. And then just try to fish this along as far as they can. January, this will start. A lot of Republicans have already indicated, including Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham, they've indicated that, you know, this is probably going to be pretty speedy in the sense that if you don't have anything to offer, then we're not going to deal with it, right? You have to actually bring something to the table in order to make this possible. I feel like they're going to play the motions as minimal as they can. I feel like they don't want to keep playing this game. What was that 90s show? Homie, don't play that. I feel like we're going to see a lot of that going on. People are going to try to play this game, and you're going to see the Republicans who are in charge in the Senate say, we're not playing that game anymore. Bring up something that fits or something that's relevant, because you're not going to be able to string it along like you've seen in the House hearings like the Democrats have been doing the past couple of months or so. So let me open it up to you. Are you sad that it's come to this point? Are you sad that at this point in American history that we're here, we're standing here? Or are you cheering this? Do you feel like this is a triumphant thing? Because I know there's a lot of people that are listening to what I'm saying right now, and they hate every word coming out of my mouth. That's fine. You can look at it differently. Here's the phone number you can call or text, 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. And in case you weren't paying attention or you missed it earlier, here's how it sounded after the first vote on articles of impeachment.
On this vote, the yeas are 230, the nays are 197, present is one. Article 1 is adopted.
Article 1? What did she say? Hold on.
Article
1. So she got an accent there.
The question is on adoption of Article 2.
I feel bad. No, I heard some of the press conference there. I feel like Nancy Pelosi was slurring some of her words. I hope she's all right.
The question is on the adoption of Article 2. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The ayes have it. The ayes have it. For what purpose?
You know, what I like is, of course, they still do an actual vote. That's how it works, too. But I like still to this day the method that they use in order to try to pass some bills, or at least the ayes and the nays, are the same thing they do inside stadiums. And when they say, okay, we're going to vote for someone now. Do you want this person to win or this person to win? And you look up at the Jumbotron, and there's this little meter, and it shows who's got the louder ovation, and that person's going to win. And come on, everybody, clap your hands. They do that inside stadiums. And they're still doing that today on the House floor. Here's the second article of impeachment.
This vote, the yeas are 229, the nays are 198, present is one. Article 2 is adopted.
All right, and that was what we got towards the end of the night. They said they wanted a revote, and they said, that's basically what they said, and then we're going to reconvene tomorrow morning, so you'll get more. I think they said 9 Eastern, so 8 Central. Don't exactly know what they're going to bring up tomorrow, but maybe they're going to try to force the revote. But I don't think I guess I don't know, technically speaking, what the right procedure is for something like that. So Nancy Pelosi may... Oh, well, hold on. So Fox News is reporting Pelosi may not send articles to Senate. Here's what CNN's reporting. Pelosi on sending articles of impeachment to Senate. We'll see what happens over there. I got to read into that a little bit more when it comes to these articles in Pelosi. They might have brought it up a little bit in that press conference, but I didn't catch that part. We've been so busy this afternoon, I'm not sure. But I want to get some of your calls. I want to get some of your emotions on this. And the thing that we're trying to figure out, are you sad right now that it's come to this in our country? Are you feeling like this is a sign of the end times? I mean, it could be. A lot of people are looking at this and saying that, well, that's it. It was a nice run for you, America. But if we're at the point where they could do this over and over and over again and use their own political motivations to abuse the system in order to bring these up, then that's just going to be the new normal. And if that's the new normal, that's not the path that we should be taking. But if that's the new normal, watch out, everybody, because what's going to happen? Are we just going to have every president impeached from here on out? Is it just going to be the new thing? Someone has a phone call to someone and they say, oh, impeached, impeach them. Is that what we're going to do? And you better believe if they did it to Donald Trump, if the Republicans are in power and there's someone in office they don't like, you better believe they're going to use the same thing over again. It's not like the Bill Clinton days, man. You know, if we had the same motivation and the same thoughts when it came to Barack Obama, let's say the Republicans who had the ability to bring up articles of impeachment, who didn't against Barack Obama. Imagine if we had this same atmosphere we have today. Let's say Donald Trump came first and President Obama was voted into office afterwards. What if we just did the same thing? I mean, it would just be over and over again. And back and forth and back and forth. Is that what the new normal is going to be? Or is it going to be the only way you can prevent this is if you have the superpowers, as in you hold the House and the Senate, and that's the only way you're going to prevent it in the future? And maybe that's the way President Trump's going to bill it in the next election, because I see a pretty strong showing for Republicans coming out, knowing that they're done with this nonsense. We'll take some of your calls coming up next on Overnight America KMOX.
We are the voice of Cardinal Nation, America's sports voice, KMOX.
Welcome back to Overnight America, and here we are on this Wednesday night. Officially, the vote went through. President Trump, the third president of the United States in history to be impeached. Last being Bill Clinton, and before that, Andrew Johnson. Let's take a couple of your calls on it, and, you know, is this just going to be the new normal? And at this point, are you sad to see it's come to this? I think a lot of people are just overall disappointed and sad that it's at this point. Let me go to John, who's in Ferguson. Hello, John.
Hey, Ryan. How you doing this evening?
Good.
Sad day for the country. Mm-hmm. And I watched almost the entire thing.
Wow.
I had it streaming while I was at work and all that. And it was just so disappointing. I mean, I thought we'd rise to the occasion as a country, and we didn't. And I'm talking about both sides here. Nobody had a monopoly on virtue. It wasn't even a debate. It was both sides reading their 14 talking points over and over and over and over and over again. I thought the two most measured speeches in the entire process were Kevin McCarthy, believe it or not, and Steny Hoyer. I didn't agree with a darn thing McCarthy had to say, but, you know, he was measured. He tried to make an argument. He wasn't, you know, yelling and calling names and throwing things like Steve Scalise was, tearing up stuff and everything else. I thought he deported himself really, really well. And I thought Steny Hoyer did, too. And whether you agree with what he said or not is immaterial, but they seem to be the only two adults in the room.
There were a lot. How did you sit through all of that? How was that even possible, John?
I had to turn it off every once in a while. It just, I could do about an hour at a time, and I just had to turn it off.
I was going to say, I don't know any human that's capable of doing that.
I was ready to rip my hair. Well, I'm a political science guy, so I love politics. But, yeah, I just had to take it in dribs and drabs, but I guess I saw probably 80% of it.
Man, you deserve an award for that. The only other people that watched more than that were the ones that were sitting in that hall, and even then you'd catch them checking their phone out because they checked out even.
Yeah, I know. You know, but this is sad, and I'm afraid this is going to be the new normal. Impeachment should have been the last resort, and whether you are like Donald Trump or not, and I'm not a Trump fan, but I'm not a Democrat either. You know, he won the election according to the rules laid out in the Constitution. It's all about the Electoral College. And he won it fair and square according to those rules. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have elections, because in 2020, if you don't like him, vote him out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it should be. Not impeaching over stuff like this. I was never in favor of impeachment, and I thought the Republicans rushed it. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi was right. You know, she didn't want to impeach right at the beginning because she saw the partisan impeachment as being really divisive and bad for the country. But she got steamrolled into it by her caucus. And I think her fears about this are going to be true. I really do. We're going to be more divided than ever now.
Oh, yeah. And that's not going to be good for the upcoming election. That's a huge gamble for them. And I think, historically speaking, what do they say about Bill Clinton? It worked in his favor. So, I mean, if you look at all the other indicators that are behind President Trump right now with the economy, jobs, and you just look at those things, they're riding high, man. So all these other indicators being what they are, and also looking at a lot of people that are unified behind him in the Republican Party, I mean, I think it's going to backfire on Nancy Pelosi. And I think a lot of people are predicting that.
Yeah, and I, like I said, she didn't want to go down this path, but she kind of got forced into it.
Yeah. Well, John, I got to say, it's quite admirable. You watched 80% of that today. Whoosh. All right, thank you for calling in. I'm
a sad. I'm a glutton for punishment.
All right, have a great night.
Yeah, Bye. You too, Ryan. Thank Bye. You. Bye.
Wow, yeah, 80%. Yikes. Can anyone beat that record? Mike calling in. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Ryan. How you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Hey, well, first of all, I like to say I'm keeping up my Blues game, though, and that is really huge. But this is really a super, super sad day for America. And I think about the fall of the Roman Empire, and if these guys keep doing this stupid stuff, it's scary. It really is. This man has done nothing but try to help our country with the China trade, the wall, work with the European Union, and what does he get? Something stupid like this, and Biden and his kid gets a pass.
Yeah. Well, what's really important, I want to point out one thing that Alan Dershowitz said that I think is pretty important. If you really believe he committed a crime, why wouldn't you hand this over to the Justice Department and then use their findings as a way for grounds that he committed a crime that's worthy of impeachment? They didn't do it that way. This is so politically motivated, and it's so telling, and I think most people can see it because it's been telegraphed well before this phone call with the Ukraine. They've been saying it since the start of, ever since he was elected and took office, even before that.
Not only that, just the word impeachment, it sounds such a slanderous word, and they want that on his record so they can use that in the next campaign. But I think they've done shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah. All right, Mike, good to hear from you. Have a great night.
All right. Thanks, Bye. Ryan. Bye.
All right. We got to go to break, and I want to take some more of your calls, so don't go anywhere. The number is 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. I hope you can hang on after the break. If not, just wait a couple minutes. We're going to get CBS News. Alex Degman's going to be back and get us local news. And we're going to talk more impeachment in the 10 o'clock hour here. 314-436-7900 on Overnight America KMOX.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.